James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Extremely happy to be with you today. How are you? How you doing? Yes, you have joined the Guy James Show. Let's turn off that music, okay? Those guys get tired playing in the background there. Yes, we are with the Guy James Show today, coming to you live from beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area, and we hope to have a lively show for you. It's not as though there isn't anything to talk about today. Man, lots of news today. Of course, we had the big primary last night. Thank God we finally got to it. We'll talk about that today for quite a little while, I imagine. Love to hear your perspective on all of it. But a solid victory for Hillary Clinton last night, more than the polls showed. Just goes to show you they're not as scientific as they think they are lots of times. She won by 10 points, 9.56, I think it turned out to be, by more than 200,000 votes. A solid victory. And we shall see where that leads this whole thing. I don't know. There's a lot of folks still think that she doesn't have a chance to win. I think maybe she still does have a chance to win. I heard David Gergen last night, whose opinion I respect immensely, said it's a major victory for Hillary. It's symbolically important. The blue-collar vote is sobering for Democrats. It's not good news for Obama. And he was closing. Not only did he stall, but he got hurt. So says David Gergen last night. And I happen to agree with that. So it'll be very interesting to see where this goes from here. I don't know. Hillary had 1,258,000 votes. And Obama 1,042,000. You know, one of the things that's very interesting about this, we had Mr. Rush Limbaugh on the radio today crowing about his Operation Chaos. You know, he has bragged about infiltrating the Democratic primary process and getting Republicans to cross over and vote for Hillary and therefore throw it into chaos. He's been bragging about his influence on it. He's bragging about it again today. And, of course, he's saying that in Denver it's going to be chaos with, cars burning and buildings burning and a 68 convention all over again. But he really thinks that he's having a big effect on this Democratic primary. He's half nuts, really, is what he is. Does he not realize? He thinks he's telling people to, he's telling Republicans to go register Democratic for a day and go vote for Hillary Clinton, because they want to run against Hillary Clinton. That's what they say, anyway. Does he not understand that, yes, a lot of ex-Republicans did vote yesterday, but they voted for Obama according to all the exit polls that we've seen? Yes, the ex-registered Republican, Republicans are voting for Obama. So, Rush, shut your trap. You're not having any effect on this election. If anything, you're probably hurting the Republicans in this election. I don't know. And it's always good to see people be broad-minded, and especially church folks. Where else but in Tennessee? I ran across this story today in Tennessee. Well, I was in Tennessee, but the story was in Tennessee. There's a sign is causing heated arguments outside a church of Jonesville, Tennessee. Pastor Roger Byrd of Jonesville Church of God put up the sign, which reads, "Obama, Osama, are they brothers?" This is on a church sign in front of a church. Church of God. "Obama, Osama, are they brothers?" it asks. Pastor Byrd says the sign is not meant to be racial or political, but rather to make people think. Pastor Byrd said his name is so close to Osama, I have a feeling he might be Islamic, therefore he doesn't recognize Christ. Let me repeat that. This man is the leader of a flock. This man is actually an ordained minister. Well, you never know these days. Supposedly he is, if he's the pastor of a church of God, a recognized congregation and a recognized group. He says his name is so close to Osama, I have a feeling he might be Islamic, therefore he doesn't recognize Christ, Pastor Byrd said. Well, you know, I have news for you, Pastor Byrd. You're a freaking idiot to start out with. You're a narrow-minded clod from Tennessee. If you knew anything about Islam, you would know that the folks in the Islamic people do recognize Christ. Didn't you study that in the seminary, Pastor Byrd? Yes, the Islamic folks do recognize Christ. Eugenia Foster is offended by the church sign. She said, "I'm embarrassed and hurt. I'm surprised a small town like Jonesville still has the separation. It is racial and hatred," Foster said. Pastor Byrd told Channel 7 News that he would ask his congregation to vote on whether to keep the sign. And get this, they voted unanimously to keep the sign up Sunday night. Jonesville Church of God does not have any African-American members. Now, there's a great congregation for you right there. There's a church where you could learn the true meaning of Christianity, huh? Yes, lots of love in that church. So close to Osama, I have a feeling he might be Islamic. That boy's been paying close attention to the news, hasn't he? He's certainly done his homework. Can you imagine this guy standing up in the pulpit on Sunday giving other people advice on how to live when he's that freaking stupid? Well, anyway. But a big win yesterday. 10 points, a couple hundred thousand votes. Hillary Clinton got 57% of the Jewish vote. She got even more of the Catholic vote. Still remains to be seen what's going to happen in Michigan and Florida. I still think the Florida people will get seated. She beat Obama by 10 points in New Jersey and Ohio. Kentucky looks kind of good for her. She can't win the seated delegates. That's a fact. Of course, neither can he. I don't know. Don't know what's going to happen there. It's going to be quite a fight. And hey, I'm still not one of those who thinks it's going to wreck the party. I'm really not. Both of them pulled out all the stops in Pennsylvania. Obama was in there fighting for every last vote at the very last minute. He spent something like $11.2 million, and Hillary spent $4.8. And by the way, her campaign is out of money. They were before last night in the red by, I think, about $900,000. So she puts out a call for money last night. Everybody give $5, and they raised $2.5 million last evening. Pretty good, I'd say. So back to battle. Tremendous amount of money both of these folks have raised. Too much, in my opinion. It's obscene, the amount of money being spent on campaigning. But how'd you like to be either one of these people? They've been campaigning now for how long? Over a year. They're out there 7 days a week from early morning till late at night, every single night, out on the road, traveling in planes and buses, traveling here, there, don't even know where they are half the time. Certainly that would lead to mistakes. I know when I get tired, I sometimes get a little irritable, don't you? And both of them have to be suffering from fatigue. They have to be. I don't know how they do it. I'm about Hillary Clinton's age, and I frankly just don't know how she physically does it. And Obama either one, I just don't know how they do it. To keep up their interest that long. Of course, I mean, they are fighting for the biggest prize in the world, I guess. But it is fascinating that somebody can go this long, this hard, and believe me, both of them are just campaigning like crazy. They must want that pretty bad, don't you think? And so it appears that it will come down to the superdelegates, 800 or so superdelegates, who many of whom still have to make up their minds what to do about this election. What would you do if you were a superdelegate? I don't know that once I decide to pick one or the other of the candidates, I don't know that I could be swayed that easily. I don't know how much good it would do, because usually when I make up my mind something, it's not that I'm stubborn, but it's just that, well, it's just that we have to decide what's best and go with it. And I'm not one that constantly changes my mind about things. But we've got a lot of people talking about let's get it over with, and I'm willing to let it play out. But there are about 300 or so superdelegates who haven't decided what to do yet. And I think that at this point, everybody pretty much does have their mind made up. And anybody that's waiting to see what's going to happen is riding the fence for political reasons. Well, what should I do? I'll wait a little bit. And I'll be on the side of the winner. That's exactly what's happening. It's not that these folks don't know how they want to go. They do know how they want to go. And if they don't by now, they're probably not worthy of being superdelegates. So that's what it is. And I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all with Howard Dean's call for them to go ahead and vote. I think they should. Let's see who's going to win, who isn't. You have to look at it both ways. Obama's ahead in pledged delegates. He's ahead in the popular vote, although that could change. But he will probably win North Carolina. He will probably win Oregon. Guam will probably go to Hillary Clinton. Indiana is a toss-up at this point. West Virginia should go to Hillary Clinton. Kentucky should go to Hillary Clinton. Puerto Rico should go to Hillary Clinton. Probably Montana and South Dakota, with very few delegates, would probably go to Obama. So he's going to end up with the lead in pledged delegates when they get to the convention. I don't think there's any question about that. How much will the popular vote be? It'll be fairly close. It's fairly close now. You throw in Florida into the mix, and it's extremely close. So I don't know. Obama outspent Clinton something like 4-1. He most certainly got better press than she did, I think, in Pennsylvania. And we've had the people all along saying, well, you know, Obama's closing, and there were people even predicting an Obama victory there. And the press wants to keep this going, and yet there's such a bias. MSNBC, you know, I actually watched Fox News the other day. I'm rambling here a little bit, but I actually watch Fox News. Yeah, I know. I watch Fox News just for a little bit, and they were accusing MSNBC of being highly biased against Hillary Clinton. I mean, they are a pitiful crew over there right now, in my opinion. I cannot stand Tim Russert. He's having a terrible time. All of them, I could tell last night, were having an awful time, accepting that Hillary Clinton was going to win this thing. Chris Matthews, can't stand him anymore. Keith Olbermann is gradually losing favor with me. He's absolutely biased. The whole crew over there last night, extremely biased against Hillary Clinton. And I'm not telling anything that you don't know here. Hillary Clinton was my candidate. I've tried to be fair to both of them, and I would never sit here and be terribly biased one toward the other and say, I love them both. But this MSNBC thing has gotten completely out of control. Russert last night just comes up with comments that are completely off the wall. He said that, where did I have this quote here? He said, in a general election, Obama needs to shore up his support with working class white women. He speculated that you might do that by focusing on the economy. And then he speculated you might do that by picking Mike Bloomberg as vice president. after saying that he needs to shore up his Obama's support with working class white women, he suggests that Obama pick a New York City billionaire Jewish mayor as his vice president. Now, that's absolutely absurd. It's just absurd. But those guys did all they could last night. Everything they could to disparage Hillary Clinton at every single chance they got. Worked hard against Hillary Clinton last night. But anyway, it turned out to be a big victory. Congratulations to Hillary Clinton. Let's hear a few reactions to that. Big party last night. Hillary Clinton supporters really happy. Where were they having this? I forget. Philadelphia? Not exactly sure.
Here in Pennsylvania, you made your voices heard. And because of you, the tide is turning. Some people counted me out and said to drop out. But the American people... American people don't quit, and they deserve a president who doesn't quit either.
Well, you got to say neither one of them have quit. Both of them are running full speed all day long. It's been an absolute marathon, and my everlasting admiration for both of them for working so very hard in this campaign. And of course, Barack had a couple of things to say as well.
I want to start tonight by congratulating Senator Clinton on her victory this evening, and she ran a terrific race.
Magnanimous and gentlemanly as always, Barack Obama. He really knows how to run a class campaign. He really works hard at it. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. We're going to pause for a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment.
There's something in your eyes. Is everything all right? You look up to the sky, you long for something more. Darling, give me your right hand. I think I understand. Follow me and you will never have to wish again. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 no. Tell me how you feel. And if I'm getting near, I'll tell you where to steer. You tell me where to steer. Da-da-da, darling. Way above the clouds and high above the stars, through the unknown black holes, no one knows where we are. But we'll return to Earth and do it all over again. Cause I know that after tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. Oh, come away with me. Come fly away with me. Just for one night, no one will ever know. No, no, no. Darling, I will leave you satisfied. Forever past time. You don't have to hide. You're free to fly. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, not tonight, we're looking down a phone from heaven. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, no, no.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes in the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereignty. It's, you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
What are you, on dope? Sometimes you wonder, don't you, when you watch that boy speak. Oh, yes. And, of course, he made a lot more really great comments this past week about the Pope and all that. He's just, it's embarrassing, isn't it? It's embarrassing. I mean, if you or I, we make a mistake, if our grammar isn't quite up to snuff, well, we're just common folks. We're not the President of the United States, although I know all my listeners are a bit more intelligent, have been smarter, and show evidence of better vocabulary and speech than Mr. Bush does. Hey, what do you think about this big announcement today? I honestly don't know where I've been. I didn't know this was coming. Petraeus, going to be the new CENTCOM commander. And Odinero is going to go back to Iraq and take over Petraeus' job. Now, Odinero has said a few things negative toward our prosecution of the Bush occupation of Iraq in the past. It makes me wonder how he got back into the complete good graces. He didn't say that many things. But we have Petraeus now taking over CENTCOM. And that bothers me a little bit. And here's the guy that's been the fair-haired boy for Bush, and I think this is very political. He's not going to be running the Afghan war and the Bush occupation of Iraq. It just bothers me a little bit to see one guy have this much power. I mean, I understand that Eisenhower had as much, well, probably, not probably, he had a lot more power and authority during the Second World War. But then again, that was Dwight Eisenhower, and then again, we had a president who had his head on his shoulders straight. We didn't have a goon like we have occupying the White House right now, this Junior Bush. So this does bother me. Bush has mentioned how he was going to leave all the decisions up to Petraeus. Well, Petraeus is certainly in a position now to make all the decisions over there. Seems like the Joint Chiefs don't have any say in anything anymore, evidently. You hardly ever hear them mentioned. I haven't heard them mentioned in a long, long time. And a story that hasn't resonated too much in the news, and at least not enough for me, is about this guy that's been caught and arrested now, American citizen, for spying for Israel. He's a Jewish man. He was in the army, I guess, and he'd bring files home and then take them down in his basement, and he'd have an Israeli agent come in and photograph them, and he was spying for Israel. And albeit this was in 1985 or so, don't quote me on that, maybe 85, 86, I'm not exactly sure. It was a long time ago. It still was well within the bounds of time. Well, I shouldn't even say that. We've been friends and allies with Israel since day one. And we've backed them to the hilt since they started their existence. They probably wouldn't have their existence without the votes of the United States. But we've been their friends. We've sent them untold billions of dollars of military aid. We've beefed up their military to the point where they're probably the second most powerful nuclear force on this earth. I don't know what the facts are, who's got the most nukes, but hey, Israel doesn't have to take a back seat to anybody except probably us. They're armed to the teeth. We stand by them no matter what. We've helped them sustain their regional supremacy over there. They're the most costly ally we've ever had. And they're spying against us. Now, what's up with that? What's the story here? This is not the first time. This has happened several times when we've caught agents from Israel spying on the United States of America and to get nuclear secrets. And still, we're at their beck and call and do anything. What's wrong with this picture? Who's controlling this country, us or the Israelis? This story, it lit my fire, I'll tell you that. I don't like this. I've never forgotten the first couple of times this happened, and here it happens again. What's the excuse for Israel spying? What's the possible excuse for Israel spying on the United States of America to try and get our nuclear secrets? What's their excuse? What can it be? And yes, like they're talking about on the Head On Radio Network chat room right now. You remember the ship, the Liberty? You remember that? How far does this go? How far do we allow this to go? Why are there not sanctions? Why are there not a public repudiation of this sort of activity? But there isn't. There's nothing. Nothing coming from our government. Oh, gee, well, we caught another Israeli spying on you. Ah, well, it's okay. They're our friends, you know. Yeah. Yeah, they're our friends. I mean, they would do a little spying. What the hell, you know? I don't like it. And oh, yeah, start the anti-Semitism thing and all that. It's got nothing to do with being Jewish. It's got to be with another country, supposedly our ally, a country that we've built their military with money. We've sustained them through their hard times. We've backed them on every damn thing they've ever done, legal or illegal. We've let them get away with murder one time after another after another. And another one of their agents caught spying. And is there George Bush, does he come on TV and say, hey, this is outrageous, this is terrible? Does anybody do that? No, they didn't do it the first time either. In fact, when they sank the Liberty, our ship, there wasn't even a big deal over that. They said, oh, gee whiz, we made a little mistake. We just made a little mistake and sank your ship. Screw you. That's pretty much the answer we got from them. Tell me they don't own the politicians in the halls of Congress. How many excuses have you seen given for the state of Israel by politicians in this country when Israel was dead wrong? I understand the plight of the Israelis. I understand the problems they have with Hamas and the terrorist groups. I understand that perfectly. I think we all do. But I also understand that it goes both ways. It's not one-sided. You understand the history of the Middle East, you understand why there's conflict there. It's perfectly understandable. That's not to say anybody's right in killing one another over it. They ought to be able to sit down and hash this out, but they haven't. And the Israelis show almost no inclination to do so. And here we have Jimmy Carter over there talking to Hamas, trying to ameliorate this situation in any way he can, one of the most respected men in the world, and you can take that and shove it to you right-wingers that have nothing but disdain for Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter's one of the, yes, whether you like it or not, Jimmy Carter's one of the most respected men in the world. That is a fact. You'll go around the world and you mention Jimmy Carter's name, and you will get nothing but admiration for that man. Believe me. Here's a man who knows how to do diplomacy. Here's a man that understands that if you've got an enemy, that just shutting him out and not talking to him is not the thing to do. Here's a man that understands that military might doesn't solve all the problems on this earth. Here's a man that understands that the Pentagon is not the answer to all the problems we have in this country. And here's a man that completely understands that the problem between Hamas and Israel has got to be talked out. It's got to be talked out. They can sit there and lob missiles and rockets and all they want to at one another from now and for another 1,000 years. And they will solve nothing unless they sit down and talk. And yet we've got the right-wingers condemning Jimmy Carter for going over there and talking to Hamas. We have the Bush administration saying, oh, we told him not to go, State Department. Carter denies that. Carter says that never happened that the State Department told him not to go. And you know, when it comes down to believing somebody, to taking somebody's word, am I going to take the word of Condoleezza Rice's State Department and the Bush administration, or am I going to take the word of Jimmy Carter? I think we all know who we can believe when it comes to that. So this whole flap over him going over there and talking, what the hell does this man have to gain by this? What does he have to gain? He has nothing personal to gain. He wants nothing to gain personally. He wants to solve this pathetic situation we have. And the only place, the place that it starts, the solution to the problem starts with sitting down and talking to the people involved, getting them together, letting them talk, a civil conversation. That's where solutions start. How many times on this earth have countries just started lobbing bombs at one another and shooting at one another instead of sitting down and talking it out? And you know they probably could have in many cases, not all cases, but many. for the Bush State Department and the Bush administration to try and denigrate Jimmy Carter over this, to try and make a liar out of Jimmy Carter, to make him look foolish, well, that's just... Man, oh man, oh man. I give Jimmy Carter all the credit in the world. He's been... You can say what you want to about his term as president. I happen to believe that a lot of things are cyclical, and he got caught in a cycle. And I happen to think there were some bad decisions made as well. I'm not going to sit here and say Jimmy Carter was the greatest president we ever had, because he was not. He was also caught in a very bad time. There are circumstances. And then we had the Reagan people trying to make him look like an ass by having the Iranians hold the hostages until Reagan took the oath of office. One of the worst, most ugly transactions to ever take place by an American. That was just plain ugly of the Reagan administration to start off that way. But I wasn't going to talk that much about that, but it just lights my fire when I see the Bush administration now. You know, well, we don't want to talk to these people. We shouldn't talk to these people. If you got an enemy, you got to talk to them. You got to talk to them. And then when it becomes inevitable, after you've talked and done everything you possibly can, everything at your disposal has been done, every action's been taken, then if you have to fight, you have to fight. You know, when I was a kid, I was shortest little skinny kid in my class in school. Went to a very small school. Had a couple of bullies that used to like to pick on me when I was like in the first and second grade. Come home with my nose bloodied. One day my grandpa got me and said, "You know what? Don't ever let anybody do that to you. When it becomes inevitable, when you've talked and you've tried to talk it out and that doesn't work, well, then you have to fight. But don't ever fight unless you've talked it out and tried to work it out first." And that's a big lesson I learned, and it's a lesson I think everybody should learn. Well, it's... Wasn't going to go on that much about that, but that this deal about them spying for Israel and getting caught now, and you watch, our government won't do a damn thing. There'll be no consequences for the state of Israel again. Don't want to belabor the point, but I think that's something that's just absolutely terrible. Just terrible. See, Karl Rove is being on Fox News more and more and more. He's, of course, they're very fair and balanced by having Karl Rove on. Do you think Karl Rove will keep his promise to testify if he gets called in front of Congress on the Siegelman case, former governor of Alabama? Do you think he'll? Do you think he'll actually do it? Yeah, sure, sure, sure he will. Mm-hmm. Don't think anybody from the Bush administration is ever going to testify again. They can call all the people they want to in front of Congress to testify, and it's just probably not going to happen. I think our congressional leaders have probably now understand that it's just not going to help to call people, because they're not going to do it. They're going to thumb their nose at Henry Waxman and everybody else that tries to get him, at John Conyers, anybody that wants them to come in, they're not going to. And Tony Snow, isn't that precious? Hired by CNN, man that said he would walk on broken glass for Bill O'Reilly. They've hired probably the most prolific and one of the best liars in the history of the press corps is Tony Snow. He was perfect for the Bush administration. One of the most convincing liars I think I've ever seen. He does it with such a pleasant smile on his face. I didn't mind Tony Snow until he took that job and turned into what the Bushes wanted him to be, as their puppet, you know, their puppet. Tell any lie. No lie was too big for him to go out and tell. But when I saw CNN hired him, I thought, what, are you kidding? Wonder who's going to hire Dick Cheney when he gets out of office. Surely somebody will hire Dick Cheney. Fair and balanced. He'll probably end up over in Fox. He'll probably have his own program over the Dick Cheney News Hour coming to you. Brought to you by Halliburton and Bechtel. Fair and balanced. Dick Cheney. Hi, this is Dick Cheney bringing you the news. Fair and balanced. Fox News. How about that Rick Santorum? What a guy. Been one of my people all along. I've just loved Rick Santorum all along. I always thought he was just the bastion of honesty and decency and all that in the Republican Party. This man is probably as big of a two-faced liar that could ever live, and he got voted out of the Senate. Never deserved to be in the Senate, but he was in it nonetheless. He made his mark. A radical, if there ever was one. Last month, and I know many of you have heard this, last month Santorum said, well, anybody but McCain, he's not a conservative. We can't have John McCain to be the president. He's not one of us. He's not one of us, said Rick Santorum, the high and mighty, ultra-right-wing, neocon, holier-than-thou Rick Santorum. John McCain isn't one of us. He's not good enough. He's to carry the banner for the Republican Party. Gee whiz, yesterday he said, I support McCain. he had a little epiphany. All of a sudden he supports John McCain now, Rick Santorum. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something I wanted to bring up to you, as I often mention, I'm not an economist. I am not. But there's certain things I understand, and I understand like all of you do. When I go to fill up my gas tank, and I don't know about where you live, but now unleaded regular 87 octane is 263 a gallon today. A 363 a gallon. Oh, dream on. Remember when we thought, oh my God, gas might hit $2 a gallon? And then it went up to 260, 270, and then went back down a little bit, and we go, whew, oh. Then it hits 3, and it just keeps right on going, leaps and bounds and leaps and bounds. It's up to $117 a barrel now, crude. Light sweet crude, 117. I don't know what it is at this exact moment, but earlier today was 117. It almost had hit 120. But, yeah, you have to wonder at $117 a barrel. The oil company is making massive, massive, obscene profits. And we've talked about this many times on the program. Absolutely obscene profits. And they're profits that are coming off the backs of the American public. It's coming off of the working men and women in this country who, well, who can afford gas at that price? Who can afford it? I mean, yes, the rich can. They'll always be able to afford it, no matter what it is. But it's starting to hurt, and it's starting to hurt bad now. Very bad. A lot of people to the point now, you got a pickup truck or all that with a big tank on it to go use it for work, costing $100 to fill it up. I don't drive a big car. My car only holds, 14 gallons, I think? 14 gallons of gas? You know, $50 to fill up a small car now. I guess what I was getting to here, I think this is something that should be absolutely illegal, and you can call me a communist, call me a socialist, call me anything you want to over there, over this comment. But I don't see a thing wrong when something is in the interest of all the public. I don't see a thing wrong with nationalizing the oil industry. Now, flame away if you will, but I don't see anything wrong with nationalizing oil. It's something I've been for a long time. It's something that, at the present time, is contributing to the downfall economically of tens of millions of Americans. The only problem is, how would you get it nationalized? Even if it was for the absolute good of this country to nationalize the oil company, how would you get it done? Because in the halls of Congress, there's money flowing every place into the pockets of our politicians. How would you ever get past the oil cartel, the oil lobby? How would you get past them? How would you and I get past it? You know, right now, if gasoline went to $5 a gallon, $6 a gallon, $10 a gallon, you couldn't get all the oil companies nationalized in this country to save your hind end, because out of 100 senators, how many would vote to do that? Maybe 4 or 5, I don't know, maybe even 10. Not very many, you can count on that. See, oil's currently at $118.30 a barrel. Oh, what good news. It'll be going up again tomorrow. Do you notice gas has been going up like a dime at a time? It's sad but true that our politicians are mostly owned by these companies. I don't want to admit it in most cases, but if you've got eyes, you can see it. If you've got ears, you can hear about it in the stories about them, the campaign contributions to K Street. Nationalize the oil? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's for the good of the country. I know a lot of people don't agree with that. A lot of people believe in absolute unfettered capitalism, unfettered free access to business, capitalism, let it run wild. But capitalism cannot flourish forever without some controls. And when it comes down to something like this, that for the good of this country, when you see this nation going down the tubes economically because of the greed of a handful, just a handful of filthy rich people, then it's time to act. I realize that the decline of the dollar has something to do with the price of oil right now, crude oil being the number one problem. $118.30 a barrel. Man, oh man, I don't think I thought I'd ever see that. Did you? That much? $118.30? 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 866-546-5254.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. And this week, His Holiness the Pope came to our land. He visited the White House, and we had a lot to talk about. Now, I'm not a Catholic, but I learned much from His Holiness's wisdom. I learned that if your faith contradicts what they are learning in the latest frontiers of science findings, then those findings are wrong. I learned that it's important to take care of the poor, but it's a lot better if you can do so while living in an ornate palace, adorned with statues made of gold, a magnificent throne that you can sit in, and jewel-encrusted goblets brimming with the finest wines. I also learned that if members of my staff are ever accused of inappropriately touching young people, that I should face it head-on and punish them by sternly talking to them, then transferring them or promoting them to different jobs where no one is aware of the problem, thus making it go away. I thank His Popehood for his visit, and I thank you for listening this week. Now, before I conclude my remarks this morning, I have some sad news. As you know, America is facing a tough economic time, and the government We've got to tighten our belts. And that means cutting unnecessary programs. Well, one of these programs is the President's Weekly Radio Address. It's a program that's a waste of your taxpayer dollar. There's more important responsibilities in the world that I need to focus on instead. The vetoing, the statesmanshiping, and of course, the warring. But don't worry, I'll still be here until January 2009. You just won't hear from me as much. I'll be like the noble archbishops in the back rooms teaching kids about the Almighty, but without the kids and without the teaching. So God bless you. Thank you for listening all these long months and years. Semper Fi, and stay firm.
Yeah, stay firm. That's our esteemed Junior Bush, the occupant of the White House. Don't forget, Junior said this week, and where do I have a clip of that? Yeah, he's speaking to reporters in New Orleans yesterday. He once again said it's not a recession. It's not a recession. It's just a slowdown. Where's that cut here where Junior talking about that? Here we go.
We're not in a recession. We're in a slowdown.
A slowdown. Okay. Well, when you go to the grocery store next time and paying outrageous prices for cheese and milk and meat and staples. Now I see that Costco and Sam's Club, for crying out loud, have starting to ration out some products like rice, for example. There's going to be food shortages. There will be food shortages, and they will hit this country. There will be some rationing in this country. There is a little bit of it going on right now. Rice is one thing. At Costco and Sam's Club, they're starting to tell you how much you can buy because there's shortages of it. But Bush goes to New Orleans, and I'm surprised they let him in that town. And he mentions that, no, it's not a recession. It's just a it's just a little bump in the road. No question we're in a slowdown, and people are concerned about it. He also warned Congress that this wasn't the time to raise taxes. Have you heard anybody on Capitol Hill saying they were going to raise taxes? It's the old campaign rhetoric coming out once a day and once again. And he makes his comments, and we had oil almost at $120 a barrel yesterday. Home prices fell once again, continuing to fall. But he said the economy grew in the fourth quarter of 2007, so therefore we don't have a recession now. And that's Junior Bush's estimation of the whole thing, with only a fool. Only a fool would know that we're into a recession right now. You can call it what you want. You can define it any way you like. You can call it what you will. You can give any kind of criteria you want for a recession right now. We are in a recession. And, ask the question, are you better off now, not than you were last year, is seven years, are you better off now than when Bush started his administration? I'll give you the fact that we took a hit during 9/11. I'll give you that. But we've had 7 years almost to get back going again, and where have you come in the last 7 years? And I'm talking to the majority of you now. What is your economic standing over these last 7 years since 9/11? How are you doing? Is your paycheck increasing enough to keep up with the price of food? Is your paycheck increasing enough to keep up with the price of gasoline and medicine and health care and all the things you need and your house payment and your variable rate mortgage? Is your income keeping up with that? Well, I can answer that for a lot of you. The answer is no, it isn't. So don't insult us and tell us we're not in some economic hard times. Don't insult us and tell us that we're not in a recession, because we most definitely are in a recession, and it's deep and it's wide and it's hurting people in this country. It's hurting millions of people in this country. Is Bush one damn bit concerned about it? He's only concerned about getting his ass through until January 20th of 2009, and leaving the White House and getting back to his ranch and building his library. That's what he's concerned about. He's concerned about preserving some sort of a legacy, any kind of a legacy. And they're talking about raising, what is it, $250 million to build him a library. Please. There would not have been a bigger waste of money in the history of the world than to build a $250 million presidential library for the likes of Junior George W. Bush. I can't think of anything that's ever been built on this planet that would be a bigger waste of money. A library. Built and named for a fool. These presidential libraries are getting out of hand anyway. Just think of this. Someday down the road, there'll be 100 of them. However many presidents we have, there'll be a presidential library on every corner someday. If we live long enough, if the country lasts that long, which at the present rate may not happen. What I think about something like that being built in honor of this man. This man who has... what, 50% of the people right now saying his performance is, what is the word they use? It's not pathetic, but it's the same thing. Don't approve. People really don't approve. You got 28% personal approval. And I think we all know about those people. They're either stupid, stubborn, or crazy. That's it. And I do mean that. I don't say that flippantly. If you are a Bush supporter after these 7.5 years that he's been in office almost, you are stupid, you are stubborn, or you're crazy. One of the three. There's some nice people that are stubborn. But you're one of those. You cannot be a level-headed American. You can't be a person that thinks for himself and still support the actions of this man. Stupid, stubborn, or crazy. One of the three. Take your pick. Some of them probably all three. There's no other way to put it, and I'm sorry. But it's just, I don't know. Talking about building a library, that just lights my fire. And then we have McCain in Ohio yesterday, in Youngstown, of all places. Saying that the NAFTA, yeah, he's one of the biggest NAFTA advocates, and he goes to Youngstown, Ohio, one of the steel towns that's turning to rust, and says, you know, we need this free trade, we need NAFTA. I can't believe he'd have the cojones to go into Youngstown, Ohio, and say that. Yeah, we need more free trade. We need more cheap crap from other countries being flooding into this country and driving American businesses out of business. That's what we need. You keep telling them that, John. You know, this election this year, McCain just keeps that up. He just keeps up talking like that. He's going to take such a beating in the fall. He's going to take such a beating. I know a lot of you look at me and say, what? Why are you saying that, guy? Why are you saying, you know, some of these polls show that he's ahead of Obama or ahead of Clinton or it's close or here and that. Yeah, all right. Those polls for the general election right now don't mean diddly squat. They don't mean anything. Once the Democrats have their candidate, you watch. There'll be a spread. It'll start out and it'll just widen and widen and widen. Man, if John McCain win the election, I'd have to be one of the most embarrassed people in the world, huh? Well, I'm not worried about it. John McCain will not be the next president of the United States under any circumstances that I can see, unless they declare martial law and all the elections null and void, something like that. Bush takes his third term, something like that. Going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show live here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back after the news.
listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I want to thank my friends and our labor unions for standing with us every step of the way.
Senator Hillary Clinton, after a solid presidential primary win in Pennsylvania against Senator Barack Obama. Clinton spoke directly to blue-collar workers after her clear victory last night.
I'm in this race to fight for you. To fight for everyone who's ever been counted out. For everyone fighting to pay the grocery bills or the medical bills, the credit card and mortgage payments, and the outrageous price of gas at the pump today.
Ted Kirsch is president of the Pennsylvania American Federation of Teachers, a union backing Clinton. He says blue-collar workers gave Clinton this win.
Well, the blue-collar workers are the people of this country. They're not the money people. They're the people who are suffering from the Bush economy. And that's why the people who are hit hardest by the issues are voting for Hillary.
Obama had the support of the SEIU, the Teamsters, and other Change to Win unions. But as he told his supporters in Indiana, the real power to change America is in our hands.
You can make this election about how we're going to help those workers in Logansport, how we're going to retrain them and educate them and make our workforce competitive in a global economy. You can make this election about how we're going to make health care affordable for that family in North Carolina, how we're going to help those families sitting around the kitchen table tonight pay their bills and stay in their homes.
Janitors, iron workers, teachers, healthcare workers, and actors recently took part in Hollywood to the Docks, a 28-mile walk from South L.A. to the Port of Los Angeles. More than 5,000 union members and supporters took part in the march. Leovani Albano met participants along the way.
The three-day series of events, part of a citywide effort to strengthen ties among workers and garner support from the community for unionization. Anthony Sestaro, who was with the Screen Actors Guild, participated in the event.
L.A. is a labor town, and the efforts that the labor unions have made in raising their own working conditions help working conditions for everybody.
This year, L.A. workers are at a critical juncture in organizing, with more than 350,000 workers belonging to 30 local unions renegotiating their union contracts. At the same time, over 30,000 workers will continue their struggle to join a union. Maria Elena Durazo is Secretary Treasurer with the L.A. County Federation of Labor.
Luckily, there are workers who are courageous enough to say we want to join together and push back because we want more than a living wage. We want health benefits. We want a retirement plan.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Out on the racetrack, a professional driver knows he's surrounded by other pro drivers.
NASCAR legend and racing champion Rusty Wallace.
When you drive a truck for a living, the only professional around might be you. All the more reason to buckle up every trip, every time. Because out on the highway, trouble can come from anywhere, and it can happen in a heartbeat. If you're ever in a crash, the smartest and the safest place for a trucker to be is behind the wheel, secure and in control of your truck, looking out for yourself and everybody around you. Without your safety belt, you could easily get bumped out of position, and that means out of control. Trust me, that's not good on the racetrack, and it's not good on the highway. So be ready, be buckled. Remember, you're the professional, the one who drives for a living.
A public service message from the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. You are listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. You can give us a call and join the conversation. We hope you do. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us. And if you've got an unlimited calling plan, well, give us a call at 941-876-6896. We'll be glad to hear from you. I got a ton of email during the news break. I was talking about nationalizing oil. Some agreed. Of course, our right-wing friends vehemently disagree. You don't want to mention that word nationalization. Remember, Harry Truman tried to do it with the steel industry one time, didn't get away with it. But I think nationalizing oil should be one of the main goals of any liberal political movement. And, I mean, you can throw all the rocks you want to. I do feel that way. And we've allowed a handful of greedy corporate plutocrats to decide the fate of the not just our economy, but the global economy. And the oil companies have used every excuse in the book to drive up the prices. They've deliberately closed down refineries to lower production. If somebody takes a shot at somebody near an oil pipeline, well, oh my God, you know, is a war breaking out? Anything to bump up their profits. And in the meantime, they put a boatload of cash into the political system to virtually ensure that Congress and the president are going to carry out whatever orders they give them. Let's face it. Who's profited the most, besides the military-industrial complex, who's profited the most? And I would say they would even take a second a backseat to the military-industrial complex. The beneficiary of the Bush war in Iraq has been the oil industry. You know, stop and think about it. Back when Dick Cheney was having those energy meetings, we didn't know it about it at the time, but eventually the truth came out, and we find out that the oil industry executives were sitting at the table when Dick Cheney carved up Iraq's oil fields for future distribution amongst American oil corporations. Do you remember that? We got a Freedom of Information request and finally got those documents, which had been heavily redacted from the Darth Cheney Energy Policy Group. Look it up. I should have gotten a link for it. There was a map showing the lease areas where the oil drilling was planned in Iraq. And then there was another one consisted of a list of 40 oil companies from 30 nations who were going to get permission to drill for oil in Saddam Hussein's Iraq. And the problem for the Bush administration was that the U.S. and Great Britain wasn't on that list. They weren't on Saddam Hussein's list. That was the problem there. So what do? The oil industry backs this bumbling fool from Texas who showed no interest whatsoever in policy. He still doesn't. He doesn't have any aptitude for leadership at all. Never did. He was a failure, a virtual failure. But the oil companies, they backed him. And he became the stooge for executing an agenda that would replace what many say is a diminishing Saudi oil reserves with the Iraqis' oil. And then, you know, very conveniently got France and Russia off the list of the competitors for that oil. You know, we got over 4,000, I think it's something like 4,043 Americans have been killed over there right now. And over 100,000 Iraqis, easily 100,000 Iraqis, have been sacrificed on Big Oil's altar of greed. And what I want to know is, to this group of people, to this group of plutocrats who own the oil industry to run it, that buy our Congress, that buy our president, when is enough enough? When do you have enough money? When did we get enough? Seems like there's no end of greed. That's one thing you can count on, and just keep on going and just keep right on going. There's no end to the greed these people have. $118.30 a barrel for oil today. Well, one thing we can be sure of, the price is going to keep on going. Going to keep right on going. How are you coping with it? Do you let your car set more? Do you walk more? You ride your bicycle more? Do you not eat out? Do you, well, who can afford to eat out nowadays? A lot of restaurants closing. Breaks my heart. One of the original restaurants where I live here, called Mel's Diner. It was the original one, closed this past week. Lack of business. Many, many, many restaurants going to close in this area this year. First of all, it's overbuilt. Secondly, the economy stinks. And just a lot of people that used to go out and eat a couple times a week, two, three times a week, can't do it anymore. It's just too... Have you noticed that? Have you noticed how fast the restaurant prices have risen? I mean, we talk about food prices, but, you know, a couple of you used to go out and eat for... A family restaurant, like this one I'm talking about up the road here that closed recently, Mel's Diner. Two of you go out and eat, and the bill be $15. You know, you get meatloaf and a vegetable, potato, mashed potatoes and corn in the salad. Two of you'd walk out of there tipping off for $15. Man, you can't do that anymore. Two of you go out and eat anymore, it's close to $40 by the time you get out of there, just for an average meal. It's way out of hand. So that and the gas problem is hurting the restaurants terribly. And many of them going out of business. We even had a chain, what was it, the Longhorn? No. One of those steak chains. I can't remember which one it is. Went out of business here. I thought it was a thriving business. Closed up their doors recently. I see they closed up 47 of them. Oh, I can't remember the name of it. It's not Longhorn. It's the other one. Anyway, this has got to be the restaurant capital of the world, and it's going to be the restaurant closing capital of the world here pretty soon. I've heard estimates. They say as many as 25% of the restaurants here will be going out of business this year. Wow. Say, if I were Chelsea Clinton, I'm not, of course. But if I were, I'd stay away from Dad for a few days. Did you see the comment that Chelsea said about her dad? She might want to stay away from her dad for the next couple of days. There's no telling how Bill Clinton felt when his little girl Chelsea told an audience at Duke University yesterday that her mom is destined to be a better president than her dad. I can just see his reaction to that. Chelsea Clinton's reasoning on all that was that Senator Hillary Clinton is more prepared to be commander-in-chief than her dad because she's got a better understanding of the inner workings of Congress. Dad just didn't have that. During her time up on Capitol Hill, Hillary learned how to stand up for what she believes, but at the same time, she knows how to make compromises with the opposition party, according to Chelsea. So Chelsea gets up and tells the students at Duke University that this is going to make President Hillary Clinton a better president than her dad was. And I imagine Bill, he's got a pretty big ego. He'd probably take exception to that privately. I don't know, but I'll bet he does. And As we often mention on this program, what is it about Oklahoma? What is it about Oklahoma? We got that crazy Inhofe senator that's global warming is a myth, and you know, all that. He doesn't accept any science at all. He's we got that Congressman Kern that made the statement recently that the gays were taking over America one town, one city at a time. I love that one. and now we've got this Dr. Coburn, the Senator Coburn from Oklahoma. Oklahoma. Oh, never mind. I know the Oklahoma fight song for Oklahoma University. I went out there one time to Norman to an Ohio State Oklahoma game. The Buckeyes won, by the way. It's been a good many years ago. Great place to go visit for a football game, Norman, Oklahoma. One of the great places in college football and one of the great football programs in the country. And I learned their school song in one day. Yeah, I really did. I learned all the words to it in one day. I was really proud of myself. It goes, Oklahoma, 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 Oklahoma is okay. Yes, I learned that. It was amazing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, we got to Senator Coburn from Oklahoma now. He wants to block legislation. You know, the Senate's currently considering the Breast Cancer and Environmental Research Act that would authorize $40 million per year over 5 years to fund research into the possible links between breast cancer and the environment. And there's a great possibility that there is a connection. And the proposal's got over two-thirds support in the Senate. But just to show you how wacky some of the rules are, the bill's passage has been stalled as a senator placed what they call a hold on it. And yesterday, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid released a statement announcing that a single Republican senator was blocking the bill, and Reid called it unconscionable that one person would single-handedly block the ability to have a reasonable debate on the bill. And it appears that the lone senator may be Tom Coburn, Oklahoma. He's an obstetrician that sees patients one morning a week. And yesterday, when Reid brought the bill to the floor for a vote, Senator John Kyle, from Republican from Arizona, he objected on behalf of Coburn. And so there's this objection, and the objection is heard, and that's it. They're not going to. So the evidence suggests that it was Coburn who placed the official hold on it. He put a hold on the same bill in 2006 and claiming that he would take in. It would put the authority for research out of the hands of scientists and put it into the hands of politicians. In March, the Senate Health, Education, and Labor Committee passed this breast cancer bill, overriding Coburn's efforts to amend it. And Coburn reportedly unleashed the threat of 15 amendments to alter the legislation. So the folks over at Think Progress contacted Coburn's office, but they received no answer back. So I think there's pretty good evidence that Coburn's the one that put the hold on all that. And, well, you just have to wonder sometimes. How about that? Did you hear about that speech of John Ashcroft at Knox College up in Tennessee yesterday? I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before. They got a small college up there called Knox College, and they got about 1,400 students. And, you know, to be perfectly fair about this, it's mostly Democratic. There's only like six Republicans in the Republican club there on the college campus out of the 1,400 students. But somehow those six got the $15,000 necessary together to bring John Ashcroft down to speak to this school. And they've had Bill Clinton there, they've had Barack Obama there, I forget, some of the other big names, and all Democrats. So the Republicans got Ashcroft to come down, and one of the bloggers over at COAST the name escapes me offhand, just put the wood to Ashcroft. And I mean big time. And Ashcroft made several statements, and there were many demonstrations against his appearing there. And the audience was a bit unruly, not unruly enough for an Ashcroft appearance. But, you know, they wore masks, they had signs, the whole business. They really protested very well, in my opinion, having Ashcroft. Who the hell would want John Ashcroft to come in and speak for $15,000 at your little school? $15,000. So anyway, he'd made a bunch of comments, and there'd been some pretty decent snarky comments made back at him, people yelling at him and so forth. But by and large, you know, the crowd would be polite, you know. So this one questioner gets up, and I just want to read the context of this. Questioner says, first off, Mr. Ashcroft, I'd like to apologize for the rudeness of some of my fellow students. It was uncalled for. We can disagree civilly. We don't need that. And so the audience applauded, and Ashcroft smiled. And the questioner said, I have here in my hand two documents. One of them, you know, is the text of the United Nations Convention Against Torture, which, point of interest, says nothing about, quote, lasting physical damage. Ashcroft had already been asked about torture, and he said, well, it has to be lasting physical damage. And so Ashcroft interrupted the questioner and said, do you have the Senate reservations to it? And the questioner said, no, I don't. Do you happen to know what they are? And Ashcroft says angrily, I don't have them memorized. No, I don't have time to go around memorizing random legal facts. He was the Attorney General. He goes on to say, I just don't want these people in an audience to go away saying he was wrong. She had the proof right in her hand, because that's not true. It's a lie. If you don't have the reservations, you don't have anything. Now, if you want to bring them another time, we can talk. But, and then the questioner broke in and said, actually, Mr. Ashcroft, my question was about this other document. This other document is a section from the judgment of the Tokyo War Tribunal. After World War II, the Tokyo Tribunal was basically the Nuremberg trials for Japan. And many Japanese leaders were put on trial for war crimes and crimes against humanity, including torture. And among the tortures listed was the water treatment, which we nowadays call waterboarding. And Ashcroft said, this is a speech, not a question. I don't mind, but it's not a question. And the questioner said, it will be, sir. Just give me a moment. The judgment describes this water treatment, and I quote, the victim was bound or otherwise secured in a prone position, and water was forced through his mouth and nostrils into his lung and stomach. One man, Yukio Asano, was sentenced to 15 years hard labor by the Allies for waterboarding American troops to obtain information. And since Yukio Asano was trying to get information to defend his country, exactly what you, Mr. Ashcroft, say is acceptable for Americans to do you believe that his sentence was unjust? Well, the house came down. There was boisterous applause and shouts of, good question. And Ashcroft then was pissed, really pissed. And he said, now listen here. You're comparing apples and oranges, apples and oranges. We don't do anything like what you described. And the questioner said, I'm sorry. I was under the impression that we still use the method of putting a cloth over someone's face and pouring water down their throat. Ashcroft interrupted. He was red-faced by then, and he was shouting, pouring, pouring. Did you hear what she said? Putting a cloth over someone's face and pouring water on them. That's not what you said before. Read that again, what you said before. And the questioner said, sir, other reports of the time say, and Ashcroft by now is red-faced and shouting, said, read what you said before. And there was cries from the audience, come and answer her effing question. Read it. And the questioner said, Mr. Ashcroft, please answer the question. And Ashcroft said, read it back. And the questioner said, the victim was bound or otherwise secured in a prone position, and water was forced through his mouth and nostrils into his lungs and stomach. And Ashcroft shouted, you hear that? You hear that? Forced. If you can't tell the difference between forcing and pouring, does this college have an anatomy class? If you can't tell the difference between forcing and pouring, and the questioner said firmly and loudly, Mr. Ashcloth, do you believe that Yukio Asano's sentence was unjust? Answer the question. And Ashcroft said, it's not a fair question. There's no comparison. Next question. Well, when you have a former Attorney General of the United States completely flummoxed from a question from a college kid that he cannot obviously answer in a with a straight face or with an honest answer, and he cannot answer that. When it comes down to the nitpicking, whether forced or pouring, what do you think about that? If you're got your hands tied behind your back and a cloth over your face and someone's pouring water in your face and you have no choice but for it to go down your nostrils and to go down your esophagus and into your stomach, don't you think that that's forcing it into you? You don't want it to go into you. You're trying for it not to go into you, but you have to breathe. And when that water comes down, it's going to go into you. So for Ashcroft to say, oh, there's a difference between forcing and pouring, come on. Once again, right-wing talking points. He is a guy, Cheney is a guy, Rumsfeld is a guy, and George Bush is a guy. None of those people, and Condoleezza Rice and a few others, Fife, Wolfowitz, Pearl, none of those people should be safe traveling outside of this country, because all of them should be likely to be arrested for war crimes. Any signatory to the Geneva Convention, to any civility that we've had, any treaty we've had around the world, all of these people are absolutely liable some of these days to be arrested if they leave the country. You remember there are places Henry Kissinger can't go today because of his involvement in Vietnam. Well, I'm sorry that I'm talking about I'm not apologizing. I'm just sorry that I have to talk about our government in that manner. It makes me ashamed. We're going to pause for a quick break. We'll be back in a minute.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Probably die in a small town, or the small communities. And all my friends, it's a small town. My parents live in the same small town. My job is a small town, provides little opportunity. Educated in a small town, taught to fear Jesus in a small town. Used to daydream in that small town, another boring romantic, that's me. But I've seen it all in a small town, and myself all in a small town. There in an L.A. doll and brought her to this small town, that small town just like me. Oh, I cannot forget from where it is that I come from. Cannot forget the people who really love me. Well, I can be myself here in this small town, and people let me be just what I want to be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I
got nothing against a big town. Still hayseed enough to say, look who's in the big town. But my bed is in a small town. Oh, that's good enough for me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I can breathe in a small town. Gonna die in a small town. Oh, and that's probably where they'll bury me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Probably die in a small town. Oh, and that's just where I wanna be. Oh,
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
Absolutely bad to worse. Have you heard any plan to bring them home from the McBush... Or McCain people? Have you heard any plan? Have you heard any plan at all? Have you heard any talk about bringing our soldiers home from Iraq, from the Iraq occupation? Have you heard any of that? Tell me. I would like for any of our right-wing friends listening, either call if you got the guts or email, whatever. Let me know what the plan is for this victory in Iraq. I'd like to know what it is. I haven't heard one whit of information about what the plan for victory is. We've heard you on the right condemn Democrats and liberals and so-called progressives. We've heard your condemnation since the very beginning of this, calling us un-American, unpatriotic, traitors, seditionists, all this sort of thing, for condemning the way this was started out in the first place and condemning the actions of the Bush occupation. And we've heard you talk about victory. We've heard you talk about winning. What is it? Define it for me. Put it in some terms. Don't give me any politician crap. Tell me, what is a victory in Iraq? John McCain, don't you owe that to us? Since you're wanting to continue this occupation, it is your desire to continue it until we win, until we can walk out of there with a victory under our belts. Oh, yes. What is it? Let's set down the rules of the game, Mr. McCain. Let's set down what defines a victory. We all know what the end of a football game is, and whoever's got the highest score. We know how baseball plays. We know how the games are played. We know how tiddlywinks, checkers, chess. We know the definition of a victory. And I think we also know the definition of a victory in war. What is your definition of the victory in Iraq, Mr. McCain? Or Mr. General Petraeus? What is it? You hear crickets chirping. Because they have not come up with a solid definition of what their victory is. They've not come up with anything sensible to define what a victory is, something that would be just and righteous enough to keep getting Americans killed. We lost, what, five more yesterday? What is it, Mr. McCain? If you're going to be the chief executive of the United States, if you want to sit in the Oval Office and there's a war going on, don't you owe it to the American people to tell us just what the hell you think you're going to do over there? When we can get out, some idea of when this debacle will be over with, can't you tell us? If you can't, You've got no business being in that Oval Office. You do not deserve to be the President of the United States if you cannot give us a solid answer on that question. Talk about you being a war hero. We hear that all the time about you being a war hero. What is a war hero? You served your country. You did your duty. You did what you were supposed to do. What you were asked to do. But now you don't have the courage to step in front of the American people and tell them what your idea of victory in this Iraq occupation is? You listen to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. No bouncing boobies. No calling a candidate a big effing whore. Nothing like that on this program. Just the facts, ma'am. You all remember Junior Bush saying, bring them on. Condi Rice did her version of that and kind of dared Al Sadr to bring it on. That's real smart. She pretty much says Al Sadr is a coward for making threats from Iran. Yeah, that he's a coward for making threats while he's in Iran. Isn't there somebody in this country running a war in Iraq, running an occupation in Iraq, but he's in Washington? What's the difference, Condi? What is the difference? I don't see much. And, of course, we've got another one of the Bush cronies. You, not Y-O-U, but... What is it, John U Y O O? Yeah. Former Justice Department Office of Legal Counsel lawyer John U, who wrote that controversial legal memos authorizing the administration's torture program. He says he's not going to testify voluntarily before the House Judiciary Committee, which, of course, will pave the way for possible subpoenas and a showdown over executive privilege again. And so his lawyer sends a letter to Chairman John Conyers, and his lawyer said his client wasn't authorized by the Department of Justice to discuss internal deliberations. And Conyers said, we've been expressly advised by the Office of Legal Counsel of the United States Department of Justice that Professor Yu is not authorized to discuss before your committee, this is his lawyer talking, before your committee, any specific deliberative communications, including the substance of comments on opinions or policy questions, or the confidential pre-decisional advice, recommendations, or other positions taken by individuals or entities of the executive branch. And of course, they always throw that executive branch in there. That's their fence. That's their protection. They put around all the illegalities that they've done in the Bush administration. And God only knows how many there have been. They put up that wall of protection around and say, well, it's covered because it's a part of the executive branch. It's an entity of the executive branch. I suppose the Forestry Service would come down to be an entity of the executive branch. Probably the guy cleaning the outhouses in one of the national parks would come down to being an entity of the executive branch, if it came to that, if there was some sort of a scandal that they had to cover up. They've used that and used it and used it to their advantage. And we know that Bush's principal advisors, and this is one of the most underreported stories that I think I've ever heard. It's a huge story. along with another one that we're going to talk about in depth tomorrow. I wanted to get to it today, but we're not going to have time. How the Pentagon literally paid Pentagon people to go around and visit Fox News and the rest of them and peddle the administration's propaganda. I'd like to get in that in depth tomorrow. But here's another one. We know who was involved in sending out these torture memos. We know who wrote it now. You. John Yoo. He wrote it. And we know that Condi Rice and John Ashcroft and George Tenet, Doug Fife, David Addington, Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, we know that they were all in on these meetings, these principal advisors. And we'll just see how many of them ever testify in front of a congressional committee. Or if they do, they'll take the Fifth. Can't see it happening. How many have they forced so far? We've got this deal. There have been so many, you know, it's getting to the point you can't remember them all. Just can't remember them all. And yes, there is a war still going on. The Bush occupation of Iraq had more Marines killed yesterday in Ramadi. I think it was, what, two Marines were killed yet when a truck bomb exploded at their checkpoint in Ramadi. Isn't Ramadi in Anbar province? I don't have my map in front of me right now, but is Ramadi not in Anbar province? So is this completely safe, we've been led to believe, by the Bush administration? Yeah, the Iraqi police said a driver of a small tanker just drove it to the checkpoint and blew it up. One civilian was killed. Dozens of people were injured. Three Marines were injured, besides the two that were killed. Yeah, Ramadi's the capital of Anbar province, isn't it? I think so. But we had General Petraeus telling us in front of the Congressional Committee just a couple of weeks ago, him and Ambassador Holbrooke, everything's fine over there. We really got this country tightened down. We've got great security, except for, you know, a little bit of problem in Baghdad there once in a while. We had, you know, that little dust up down in Basra. And my isn't the story from Basra changing. We'll talk about that in a minute, but changing radically. It turns out that Americans did most of the fighting there. They weren't there in a supportive role. They ended up doing most of the fighting. And we had five American troops died in Iraq yesterday, including a Marine killed by a roadside blast in the southern city of Basra. And that was the first U.S. fatality in the city since the Iraqi government had that crackdown there just about a month ago. So we are up to 4,044. 4,044. Man. You know, one of the things that bothers me, too, is with the propaganda coming out of Washington. The Bush administration, if nothing else, they have been masters at propaganda. And they've used it and used it and used it. They've done a great job at propaganda. I have to give them credit for that. Lenny Riefenstahl would fit right in with this group. Probably learn a few things from them. If you don't know who Lenny Riefenstahl is, look it up. But we have this propaganda coming out of Washington all the time that, Al-Qaeda in Iran and Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Al-Qaeda in Saddam Hussein. Al-Qaeda was just good friends with everybody over there, you know, and so therefore we had to go in Iraq and clean them out. They're in cahoots and, they're in Syria, they're in Iran. Make it sound like Al-Qaeda and the Iranians are good friends. And it could well be that the U.S. holds Al-Qaeda and Iran in equal contempt, but at least in the real world, there aren't any worries that these two people, the two outfits, are ever going to get together, Al-Qaeda and Iran. Yesterday, Osama bin Laden's top lieutenant denounced Tehran via audio tapes for spreading the theory that Israel was actually behind the 9/11 attacks. And Zawahiri, bin Laden's lieutenant, was on a militant of Islamic website that's... let me quote him. He said, "The purpose of this lie is clear, to suggest that there are no heroes among the Sunnis who can hurt America as no one else did in history. Iranian media snapped up this lie and repeated it." In other words, Al-Qaeda is pissed that the Iranians are not giving them credit for 9/11. And Zawahiri went so far as to suggest that Iran is cooperating with the U.S. by helping American forces to invade Muslim homes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, that's a good one. 866-546-5254. I'm a numbers guy. I love to deal with numbers. I don't know why. I've got a thing. Math was always my game. School, I love math. Took to it like a duck to water for some reason. Wish I was better at a lot of other things, but math was always something I was good at. And I came across a couple of statistics that when I read them, I thought, no, that can't be true. And I'm sure you do that once in a while. But if you and your wife, whatever, if you've got a household income of $36,000, I'm going to round this off, of $36,000, the typical U.S. worker take home is $36,000. You'd get almost as much as our financial world's 50 highest paid hedge funds managers averaged last year for just 12 months of hedge fund labor. If you worked for 16,000 years. If you made the average American pay of $36,000 a year, $36,140, that's a typical U.S. worker take-home pay, you'd have to work for 16,000 years to get almost as much as our financial world's 50 highest paid hedge fund managers averaged last year for just 12 months of hedge fund labor. A hedge fund manager, on the average, and this is talking about all their income altogether coming out of these hedge funds, makes 31 times more in an hour, than the typical American family makes in a year. Think of that. These hedge fund managers, on the average, make 31 times more in an hour than the typical American family makes in a year. I think that's an extraordinary statistic. Just absolutely out of sight. But some of them are into the billions of dollars now with their options and all the... It's just incredible. Wow. I just thought that was an extraordinary statistic. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us, we'll be back in a minute or two.
Changing the way you hear music. Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Ah, yes, Billy Shears, music director here on the Guy James Show. Tune in to his Saturday night show. It's always great. Always great. And if you don't listen to it later, well, however you want to do it. But do listen. You'll learn a lot. You will. Great tunes. Billy and I have similar tastes in music. Very similar, I think. Taking a look around at the... I don't have time to get into anything in depth here at the moment, so I'll take a look at what I call a little fluff going on around. I see that Paris Hilton had a little problem over in Moscow. According to Britain's Sun newspaper, Paris Hilton has been banned from the Hyatt in Moscow after she recently vandalized a room in one of their hotels located in the Russian capital during a photo shoot in a suite that runs $16,000 a day. God, what's wrong with society? Anyway, the 27-year-old heiress allegedly wrote Paris, Moscow, 2008 in black magic marker on the wall. And officials at the Hyatt ordered her to pay $9,000 for her transgression and told her she's no longer welcome at the hotel. A spokesman said, quote, Miss Hilton ruined the wallpaper in the luxury suite. In such a case, the client automatically goes on the blacklist. Jeez, $9,000 for a little bit of wallpaper. Woo. Man. And I see O.J. Simpson wants to be on the Celebrity Apprentice show. He beat the murder rap, but is O.J. Simpson tough enough to face Donald Trump? According to the New York Post, Simpson has asked Trump if he can be in the Celebrity Apprentice when it returns for its next go-round. A source tells the Post, quote, Simpson really wants to do it. He and Trump and NBC are thinking about it, but are being very cautious. You think? Oh, man. You know, if they're going to put OJ on any of those shows like that, they ought to put him on Big Brother. They got all those cameras every place, and there's no way, you know, he wouldn't be able to get away with murder that way. Man. NBC and Trump are being cautious. What are they, taking all the knives away from the before the dinner meeting with OJ? I have to wonder about that. That's an amazing statistic. And are you happy? A new survey reveals that only 35% of Americans would describe themselves as very happy. Broken down by gender, 33% of men and 36% of women say they're very happy. Women are happier than guys, in other words. And the findings are part of a new Harris poll that examined 9 aspects of life to come up with National Happiness Index. People who describe themselves as very religious are among the happiest of people. Older folks appear to be happier than other age groups. 47% of folks over 65 say they're very happy. Well, they're retired. In comparison, the percentage for people 18 to 24 is just 29%. 51% of the respondents admit having credit card debt. Well, not surprising, more people without credit card debt, 37%, say they're very happy, compared to those who have any amount of debt, only 32%. And 65% of Americans say they frequently worry about their financial situations. Oh, duh. 73% of Americans say they feel their voice is not heard in national decisions. And 37% of respondents say their work is frustrating. And 32% admit they rarely engage in hobbies or pastimes that they enjoy. So, gee whiz, a lot of people just aren't happy. Who would have thunk it? That many. Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us today here on the Guy James Show. It's been a quick 2 hours. I don't know where the time went today. Tomorrow, I hope to have a guest on to talk about this what I think is absolutely a conspiracy to send Pentagon people out to spread Bush propaganda about the occupation. In fact, I just corresponded with a potential guest on that just a few minutes ago, so we hope we have them with us tomorrow. And we hope you'll be with us tomorrow. We'll have an interesting conversation about that, about how the Bush administration has been working overtime to push their propaganda into every household in America, and believe me, I think they've done a great job of it. I think you agree with that as well. Thanks for being with us today here on the Guy James Show. Always a pleasure to have you. Don't forget, we are a listener-supported show. Happy to have you visit us over at theguyjamesshow.com and throw a nickel or two our way. Thanks so much for listening to the Guy James Show. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director. We'll see you tomorrow, gang. And don't forget, you've heard from the Radical.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. A recent poll shows that 63% of Americans oppose the war in Iraq. That's a large majority of Americans. Heck, it's hard to think of an election where a presidential candidate has won by 63%. It's very hard to find a policy on which 63% of Americans agree that hasn't already been implemented. And yet, despite this widespread belief among Americans that we have lost way too many lives and way too much money in Iraq, the peace movement, the movement to bring the troops home, is pretty weak. Sure, you have Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton calling for removal of our troops. They are getting a large support in, Pennsylvania and elsewhere. But that's on a wide number of issues, on all the issues that we support presidential candidates, everything from health care to the economy to, liberal social issues. It's not just the war in Iraq. But why is it that we don't have large protests opposing the war in Iraq? After all, one of the main reasons it is said that the Vietnam War drew to a close, that Congress finally did cut off funding for the war in Vietnam, was because of the masses of people that protested. Hundreds of thousands of people, not only young people, not only hippies, but, well, regular young and old people of all socioeconomic classes and races marched to oppose the war in Vietnam. Even Martin Luther King famously gave a speech on an issue that had little to do with civil rights, an issue where he opposed the war in Vietnam. You don't see those protests today. In Washington, D.C., just 2 months ago, Code Pink and 22 other peace movements set up a huge protest to oppose the war in Iraq. Less than 200 people showed up. The plan was to go and blockade the IRS. Not quite sure why. Sure, we've spent hundreds of billions of dollars in tax money on Iraq. That's true. But the poor bureaucrats at the IRS, they don't decide where the money goes. That's the president's fault. That's Congress's fault. If there was anywhere to protest, it would seem to be the White House or the Capitol would be the likely places. And what did Code Pink do? Well, it wasn't exactly a dignified protest. They dressed up in pink, wore nightgowns, and apparently carried a bed around. 23 organizations, less than 200 people, less than 10 people per organization. So at a time when 180 million Americans opposed the war in Iraq, they couldn't get one millionth of that number